On this podcast, I share a presentation I did at the Institute for Industrial and Systems Engineer Conference in Orlando in May of 2018. The presentation was called Process Improvement for Social Responsibility, and it was with Billy Ingram, who works at Interface in the Lean Development Group. We both went through a training program with the Sherpa Sustainability Institute. Within that program, we talk in the presentation around this methodology called Continual Improvement for Social Responsibility, or CISR. That program is kind of like a Six Sigma for social responsibility. It uses a model similar to the DMAIC model, so something called SOFAIR. And so in the presentation, I kind of walk through those steps and explain that. The presentation is around 45 minutes long. The slides will be available in the show notes as well as you can go right to the YouTube video and watch the presentation with the slides. Check it out and let me know what you think. Thanks.
If you have any questions, please hold it to the end. Make sure everybody has a chance to.
Make sure you get through the presentation. Good morning. Thanks for coming out. It's last day of the conference, 8 o'clock. Almost as bad as the 3-something presentations this afternoon. So. Don't have the worst spot.
Don't we know who the dedicated people are to sustainable development?
Joel didn't do you any favors.
So we're going to talk about process improvement for social responsibility. So really trying to apply these concepts of Lean, Six Sigma, quality improvement around social responsibility issues. So Billy and I will talk about some of the work we've done around this initiative that I think is pretty cool. I wanted to share with you guys.
So, my name is Billy Ingram. I think y'all already knew that, everybody here did, but I've been working with Lean Sustainability Principles for a long time. I came out of the textile industry, went through automotive, spent about 7-8 years there. I learned a lot of Lean and Six Sigma, cut my teeth, and I tried to find a job from there, tried to get out of there as fast as I could. So anyway, I joined Interface in 97 as an industrial engineer. I like to speak about sustainable design and social responsibility. I love to learn. I do a lot of opportunistic type of improvement and innovation around corporate manufacturing, which is the industry that I'm in. And I'm very passionate about individual engagement. If you want to know more about me or check out my social channels, you can check me out on About Me.
Can you get an IE? Degree?
I actually do not. Okay. I have a business management degree, and then I have an MBA, both from Troy University. I was trained on the job, industrial engineering, in automotive. So okay. They got me there, and the turnover rate was about 30%, and said, hey, you look, you interested in being an IE manager? Sure, what is an IE? So then they trained me, and so I got some really good training there. And, so that's what I did after that.
Real world experience.
That's right, practical experience.
I think I know everybody here. So I've been doing Lean and Six Sigma for the last almost 20 years now. And lately, the kind of last 8 to 10 years, been really looking at sustainability and how to bring that into or apply that to some of the improvement work. A master black belt, and then also the CISR practitioner, which we'll talk about. That means I spent 18 years at Rockwell Collins, an aerospace company, became a consultant. Last year, on my own, I went through the certified B Corporation process, which you can do as a solopreneur, which I didn't realize. Just go through and kind of assess your own organization and what metrics you're collecting and what you do with your volunteer time and your donations. So went through that process in January of this year. Really passionate about the environmental side of this, and I have a book that I put together for trying to encourage other people to go into some volunteer work and bring their skills with them with that volunteer experience.
And it's really good if y'all haven't read it, so.
I think everyone's gotten a copy now.
I haven't got one yet.
You don't have a hard copy?
No, not yet.
Okay. I don't know how to work it, so I'll take it.
Okay.
Some real quick stuff. Since I work at Interface, we are required to show the next few slides. It's a joke. I was telling Brian, we show this slide every time, but the Interface is a lot of times we actually are a carpet manufacturer, but most people think we're some type of consultancy around sustainability because our founder, Ray Anderson, back in 1994, decided of his own accord that he was just going changed the way he was doing business because of the book he had read by Paul Hawkins, The Ecology of Commerce. So since then, flip the slide, Interface has been ranked for the last 20 years in the this particular metric, which is a sustainability metric, where people are asked, when you think of sustainability, which companies do you think of? So Unilever, Patagonia, Interface, IKEA, Tesla. So we talk about that a lot. A lot of our literature is around that. A lot of our business models are around that. And so anyway, 20 years later, we're still working on it. We'll talk about that some more later. So Brian mentioned just a second ago, we've been working with a group called Sherpa Sustainability, and their focus is on applying Lean and Six Sigma to social responsibility, or social sustainability, we call it. Social responsibility, we have a slide to go over there in just a minute. But anyway, what it does is that the organization makes decisions and activities with society and the environment in mind. And this includes a lot of different things. But so social responsibility to contribute to the sustainable development, including health and welfare of society, takes into account the expectations of stakeholders, which is a big game changer. Is in compliance with applicable laws, and is consistent with international norms of behavior. And this is really important when you talk about global organizations that are sharing product. And then it's integrated throughout the organization and is practiced in these relationships. That's, this is a real summarized version. There's a lot that goes on behind this. Here's the seven core subjects. I don't know, how many are familiar in here with ISO 26000? Somewhat? Okay. Well, these are the things that you're trying to take into account from a stakeholder standpoint. So, and this is really important because when you're trying to solve a problem, especially at a root or change behaviors, then how you form the problem changes your solutions. So, to me, setting about a new perspective or forming the problem differently gives you different solutions. And this has been the primary thing for me that's been very different about this type of work. But you can see the thing I would have written off to you, but a little bit of common sense. You can find this online. It's really easy to find ISO 26000 and read through it.
It's not a certification, though.
No,
it's not.
It's just a guidance. Yeah. So you can't be certified as ISO 26000, at least not yet. And I don't know if they will ever do that, but I hadn't heard about it until we got into this training and they started talking about it. So we go through and they kind of explain all the details of that, what is involved in there.
Do we know any companies that are currently
practicing it? Not that I know, like any major companies that use this as their framework. So if you are a benefit company or you sign up as a benefit company through your state, then you have to have a framework that you're using to drive your social responsibility. It could be you become a B Corporation, or you can adopt something like GRI, Global Reporting Initiative, and say that's how we're going to measure and show our progress towards improvement. Or you can adopt ISO 26000 as another option to how to do that. So you have to just pick something and go with it. There's a couple other options that, at least in the state of Oregon, you have these options to use as frameworks. So that's the only thing I've seen it, but I don't know any major company that says we're using ISO 26000 as the way we're improving.
I will say this, that almost all of the ones that was on that previous slide, where you're talking about the GlobeScan Sustainability Survey, almost all of them have at least given consideration to ISO 26000, and they at least have a response on their website, because I've went and researched several of them. Interface has a response, guidelines that we follow, and they say how we're following the guidelines. So that's helpful.
I was also thinking, I wonder how they match up with the UN's Sustainable Development Goals.
They're similar.
Yeah.
Oh, they could probably
fit them across, yeah.
Yeah.
So the women that put together the Sherpa Sustainability Institute have developed that out of a book they wrote called Continual Improvement for Social Responsibility. That's available. And that's, I think they had put on a little workshop or like a webinar of their book, kind of highlighting the key points in there. And that's how I got involved in that. I was just kind of interested to learn about it. And then as part of the training, then you get a copy of the book and get to go and learn. And then they have an online training that kind of goes through a lot of the details. And then a part of that, like a lot of improvement programs, is you do a project. So we'll talk about some of the projects we did. But they use the acronym CISR, C-I-S-R. Sounds like scissor. So it's a methodology based on kind of a Six Sigma method approach to look at sustainability or social responsibility. And it uses a similar approach like the DMAIC model does in the Six Sigma world. So they call that SOFAIR. SOFAIR stands for, the S is stakeholders and subjects. So in ISO 26000, the seven subjects are those different areas. And then the stakeholders are all the people that are affected by your organization. It's not just your internal employees and leadership and customers, but it's actually the community, the environment, and everybody who's affected by that organization. And so the way you can see over here, it's shifted to the left from your traditional DMAIC model. And that's because when in traditional approaches, you start off with a problem. And you say, we've got this internal problem, or our customers are complaining, and we're going to go solve that problem. This methodology would back up and say, who is all the potential stakeholders first? Let's get our hands around that. And then let's go and talk to them and find out what the problems are that they care about. And then let's connect it to our internal problems, and together we'll find something that helps our organization and addresses a stakeholder issue that they're complaining about or frustrated with as an organization. So then we can have a win-win there. Because there's so many different issues organizations can dig into, so let's have our stakeholders help us define those. And then let's start the project after that. So that's why it's kind of shifted over. Then you'll get into stuff like the objective, measurements, focus, you know, Pareto principle, analyze, improve. There's also an innovate section that kind of gets into how do we rethink these problems and not just be really narrow-minded about solving it. How do we think outside the box a little bit and use some more innovation tools in there? So. And then report and repeat sometimes gets left out of DMAIC a little bit. I've even seen the major models with an R at the end. Just make sure people summarize and quantify and communicate out the results. So they have that piece embedded in there too. And then these are the different types of tools. So you have your traditional process improvement tools, but a lot of these are focusing more on the team interaction and the discussions and quantifying information that sometimes in social responsibility is not as clear cut. We don't have great metrics for a lot of these things. So we have to use a little bit more team building skills, tools to get all the stakeholders together and come up with some priorities. So you see if there's, you know, I'm not gonna go through all these different tools, but TRIZ, Hoshin-Kanri, risk assessments, so they have a social responsibility FMEA, and looking at risks from that standpoint. Five Y's, five W's, that type of stuff is, you know, traditional things too. So these are the different tools used or considered at different phases. And that's what you go through and learn about in the training.
So, and Brian did a great job summarizing all that. I would have been a lot more lengthy in my session. So what's the key points that's different? Social responsibility is front and center, and as I said, stakeholder analysis that he's talking about engagement is a great way to bring in kind of the Hoshin-Kanri, a strategic deployment type concept, which is one of the projects that I actually used at Interface was to try to draw some people together and move forward. I didn't explain exactly what I do at Interface. I said I work there. I don't know if I'm the janitor or if I'm the president or whatever. My job title is I'm director of lean product development. So my job is to and I'm one of the only lean people at Interface. So there's probably a handful in the whole company worldwide. So we are not a lean house. We are not a Six Sigma house. And ironically, we are known as a sustainability leader. I don't get it, but nevertheless. So maybe we couldn't have got there through Lean Six Sigma. I'm not sure. But anyway, what's the difference? Social responsibility is front and center. Stakeholder engagement is robust. There's several tools that make it extremely robust. As I mentioned earlier, the more you understand your stakeholders, the better you can align and align your projects and the things that you want to accomplish with the organization, and it makes literally helps you align to be more successful. Social sensitivity, I'm not the most socially sensitive person in the world, so this definitely makes you more aware because it brings it out into focus because you basically walk through a set of questions to help you. Preservation of diversity. The stakeholder engagement piece also helps you preserve diverse thought without and kind of to keep powerful personalities from controlling the ideas. So it very much helps, it's helped me in that way. Transparency, authenticity, and a general purpose-driven organization is also some things that you can get when you start connecting your ideas and your problems and your solutions with social causes that people feel strongly about, rather than just saying, hey, yeah, let's everybody get excited, we're going to make more money. That doesn't really work, in my opinion. So anyway, real quickly, to walk through these SOFAR projects, again, I'm responsible for product development interface. So my first project, practitioner, was called Project Phoenix, and it literally means exactly what it said it meant. It was somewhat offensive to other people and sometimes inside of our company, especially our Dutch friends. I'm not sure why they didn't like it so much, but they specifically had an issue with the name. See, gotta tell you a 30-second story. The guy who's the president of that division, I was eating dinner with him and his technical guru, and I was explaining to him what we want to do. So he said, so let me get this straight in his Dutch English. He said, what you want to do is burn our process to the ground and start over. I said, exactly. You're exactly right. That's exactly what I want to do. Although we won't actually burn it. We're just going to rearrange it. So that's where we started, and the goals that we had up here was to improve the iterations, the possible iterations in product development from one every 8 weeks or 7 weeks to one a week. So think about how does Lean Six Sigma help product development? Well, it helps it a lot when you take a trial that takes 7 weeks and you move it down, you collapse it to where it takes 1 week by improving the reliability and cycle time, right? Now my designers get 7 looks at the same product if they need it, or either they take 3 of them and take 4 weeks and make the process faster. So the second one was, when we talked about the project itself, we had 2 primary opportunities. One was to improve the administration, which is often overlooked, of the process, the soft side. And the other was to improve the actual cycle time of producing carpet. So we focused on both. And we were taking a 3-week lead time administration, and we collapsed it to 1 day. And we took a 4-week manufacturing process, collapsed into 5 days, which is what we were, so basic industrial engineering, basic Lean Six Sigma. We applied it that way, and those 2 circles up there are just the amount of effort that it takes to do one another. I couldn't figure out how to represent it very well. So that was the first project. That was actually my scissor practitioner project that was very, very similar to Black Belt and Six Sigma. So all those tools that Brian showed, I used all of them as required to actually finish the course, and it's all online, so we had the hardest part to me was the discussion boards, which is a big giant challenge to me, but I managed to force my way through that. So the second project was a scissor expert, which is kind of on a master black belt level, so we had to use all of the tools listed, which was a little tedious, but nevertheless, it should be very thorough. So. And this was about Hoshin Conry at Interface, strategic deployment. So I was able to get one thing done out of this. This is the focus phase. I needed our senior management, from our president down, to agree on what they wanted to do in product development. So I've given 3 initiatives. So an operations plan for the next 3 years. So we gave 3 initiatives. Can we all agree we want to improve product development? Yeah, we can all agree on that. Can we all agree that we want to deploy what we learn in product development to the other divisions? Yeah, we can agree on that. Can we all agree that we want to re-engineer the carpet making process and start up from scratch? No, we can't agree on that. So the truth was, that was my project at the end, was just to get everybody to agree on two primary things, which I constantly remind them of over and over. Remember you said we wanted to improve and crop development. Remember that operations plan presentation? That's why we're doing this. Remember you said you wanted to deploy capabilities? That's why I need this money. I need this money to build this new plant or whatever. So those were my two projects, and it was very useful. It was very, like Six Sigma Black Belt, Master Black Belt, it was very labor intensive. But saying that, it was very, I learned a lot through the process. A lot of the stuff we've used here, these are some of our metrics. You can't really see them that well, but we've been measuring interface at mission zero. We've been measuring all of the things that have to do with using no materials since 1997, I think, is when we started. So we've been measuring this for 20 years, and you can find all of the slides that you can actually read on our website. So what we've done is that we track that globally, and we've reduced everything from materials, water, every type of sustainable energy you can think of, from how much we recycle to how much we get bio-based to
carbon emissions,
everything. So we've been able to reduce that significantly just by a focused effort, one thing we can all agree on. Our latest initiative, again, I've already talked about stakeholder engagement a lot already. Our latest initiative, Climate Takeback, is what you'll hear people talking about now at Interface. This is what they're promoting. So the basics of it is, why can't carbon be a new tool to help us in our processes? So instead of thinking of it as a negative thing, we want to think of it as a positive thing and see if we can actually use our processes and our products and our materials to sequester carbon and use it as a building block so we can store it. And the basics are up top up there. Love carbon, let nature do the cooling, lead the industrial revolution, and then live zero. It's kind of the high level things that you'll hear people preaching in Interface now. So, we actually have processes. I work real closely with the R&D group, and they have very plausible, practical ways that we will be able to fulfill our Mission Zero goal and create a whole new line. Actually, we're in the process of building them now, product development. Building all of our new products going to be carbon, not just carbon neutral, but carbon negative. So they'll be kind of sequestering the carbon in the process as we go through and put it back in. I was a little skeptical that this was even possible until I actually walked through with the R&D group and then explained to me that three primary projects. And guess what my involvement was in those projects? I was helping them engage their stakeholders and organize their stakeholders, analyze it so they could create a Hoshin Kanri effect globally. That was my involvement with it. So, and that's really important when you're trying to get people to do things that they've not done before. They may say, wait a minute now. What are you talking about? You say you're going to sequester carbon? You say you're going to try to use it as a building block? A lot of people are like me that say, show me. Show me. Prove to me. I don't want to hear your rhetoric and your opinion. I don't want to see fact. So anyway. This is what I've learned. At Interface, I have a lot of lean and Six Sigma experience. I really joined the Sherpa Sustainability at Holly's request. I ran into her at the Lean Six Sigma conference. We were talking about the same thing. I was talking on the second grade level, and she was talking about the PhD. But I said, that's an opportunity for me to learn. So my biggest learnings here is that had a good economic skill set, a good skill set applying Lean Six Sigma to environmental issues, because I work at Interface. I've been there a long time, so that's kind of second nature now. What I did not have was a practical tool set around social responsibility, social sustainability, or stakeholder engagement. So that was a huge gap that filled for me. Now I'm much more, I feel much more confident and actually working on a social issue now. It was a very challenging curriculum, which I like. Learners learn the challenge it is. Practical application. I rarely learn things that I don't want to use. I feel like I just don't have enough time left in my life to learn things that don't mean anything. So I learn things and put them practically into use. I love collaborating with people that are very forward-thinking. So this group kind of is a hub for people that are thinking that way. So that was very much of a draw to me. And of course, like I said, a lot of this inside of Interface is filling gaps for other people. I suspect, and I speak a lot to people, especially students, and I tell them that this, I wish I would have known about this ability to lay this in, this type of Lean Six Sigma knowledge into social responsibility back 20 years ago. It would have made a big difference for me. So now, I tell other people that it would make a big difference for them.
So I also got involved probably like 2 years ago with the program and learning this methodology. So I was running, and I'm running a nonprofit right now. It's an older nonprofit. It's been around 30 years in Oregon, and I ended up becoming the president last year, or maybe 2 years ago. And so because I had I had a lot of influence in that organization, made for a good project to try to apply this for my practitioner project. And so what we're focusing on was how do we engage individuals in Portland area, Portland metro area, in activities that they can do to improve the environment. And we had already established that we're going to go after coffee cups as an initiative. And so through this project, what I think some things I took away from this and kind of going to the next level of that. So we already have the project, but we wanted to back up and say, who are our stakeholders? And really trying to back up and say, it's coffee shop owners, it's customers who drink coffee, and it's regulatory, it's haulers, waste haulers. And how do we get their voice pulled into our initiative? Because what if we go down a path and start promoting something that they fight us on? We don't want to get to that point. So really kind of thinking of who is affected by this initiative that we need to consider or take into account first. Because like anything, you don't want to get to the very end and say, we're ready to push forward on some solution, and then you find out that's where all the complaints come in and pushback. And then you have to go fight those battles. So the main thing we come out of this was really trying to focus in our message a little bit on, you know, there's two options we can really promote. Bring your own cup to the coffee shop if you're going to drink coffee, or dine in and enjoy your cup of coffee using one of their cups. What allowed us to focus in on the bring your own cup is because that applies to everybody, whereas not every coffee shop offers reusable cups. There's concerns with like, can I wash them? And there's extra labor involved and stuff. So sometimes they're not really promoting as much. So staying focused on what is our clear message we're gonna go after helped kind of evaluate did some little surveys and said, most of the coffee shops offer reusable cups, but not everyone. And so everybody, we can promote bring your own cup. That applies to every shop, no matter what their situation is. The other thing we talked about is innovation. And what is it really we're trying to get at? Because we just always think about coffee cups. It's very narrow-minded. But really, the goal is to get coffee into the consumer, right? And so maybe we can broaden it a little bit and think about, what does that ultimately look like? Is there a way to even bypass coffee cups in general, intravenously getting coffee through, or, you know, I don't know what that would look like.
Caffeine,
yeah. Right. Does it have to be a cup? You know, I guess that's very limiting. And so trying to broaden it to what is really the something they call ideal final result. And it's really getting coffee into the consumer. And so then that kind of broadens the possibilities a little bit wider than what you might normally think about. So that was good. And really just kind of also thinking about sustainability of the organization. How do you take this nonprofit and keep it going for another 30 years or more? And then I'm also coaching some people. And so there's a brewery in Portland that I helped. And their issue it was really around this organizational governance, which really is something I didn't understand at first. But it's really about how are decisions made in the organization. If it's very top-down driven, you can't have good social responsibility because the employees basically don't feel like they have a voice in that organization. And it's very hard to do anything if that's the setup. And so for this brewery, what they were doing is they were growing very rapidly and having a lot of success. But they were just kind of making a lot of decisions and not really evolving or having a good forum for getting the employee input and concerns addressed and heard. So what that project was revolving around is how do you pull in that input from the employees and get them to voice their opinions, feel safe voicing their opinions, get a response, good or bad, that says, I heard you, I understand, but we're not going to do that, we can't change this. And then the feedback just to management that says, hey, you've got some struggles here, some challenges. So they're working on some surveys and then taking that survey result and then having daily communications, changes in the menus, how do you communicate those out instead of people saying, I didn't hear about that, no one told me. So incorporating it into like the, when they log in, that it pops up with the changes for the day. No, hey, we're out of this supply, so don't, that's, you have to tell the customers this before they order. Make sure you read our update on the, you know, the discounts we're offering. Hey, there's a sale coming in, or we've put out these coupons, so you might see a lot of these coming in today. Some kind of a way to better communicate to their employees. So that was the real focus around social responsibility. That's something you don't normally think about. And so that was kind of my experience of going through there. And then I've coached a couple other people through this process as well. And I'm going to be starting up my expert project, probably on my own consulting business, seeing how do I improve my social responsibility or my B Corporation scores as a way to move forward. So if you're interested in the training, they have different levels: advocate, facilitator, practitioner, and expert. And that's at SherpaSustainabilityInstitute.org. If you want to learn more about that. Yeah, and then so social responsibility is really critical for businesses and organizations. And it's a lot of it is coming from consumers, especially for the consumer-facing market, and employees are asking for this. And that's what makes it good for business. It's because you want to attract, you know, as many consumers as possible. And you want to keep your employees happy and keep them around. And so that's a big driver, I think, of a lot of these initiatives that companies are trying to step up to meet those demands, whether they believe in this or not. And so the SoFair methodology is very similar to the demand model of Six Sigma, except we're spending a lot more time up front figuring out who the stakeholders are and getting their voice into deciding what we're going to focus our improvements around. And then there's ways to expand your knowledge, check out the book, or get signed up for some of the webinars or learnings. Tina and I gave a webinar last week around her project, around the ISE Sustainable Development Division and some of the work being done there. So that was also through the SoFair model that we used. So
I would like to add too, the stakeholder engagement piece is more important than just saying, hey, we're gonna try to pick out projects that work and get everybody in line. I've killed at least 10 projects because I could not get alignment, I could not get support. So
you made the comment that you're known as a sustainable organization, but not necessarily as a lean organization. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, there's no doubt we're not a lean organization.
You can. So one of my friends who did some research on synergy between lean and green did find that it's easier to go from being lean and then adopting a waste lens on other waste issues that are considered sustainability wastes, rather than going the other direction, that it's harder to build the skill set, at least in the correlation and the analysis that you did. I thought that was an interesting comment.
Yeah.
Are you making a specific effort to try to get the organization more lean?
Actually, we're going about it from investing in an individual standpoint. I'd like to think, with no ego, that you can have one person, and I would say I'm an example that I've not always been successful. You can have one lean person in an organization that makes a huge difference. People don't have to understand lean. They don't have to understand Six Sigma. Neither do they have to understand SISR SoFair methodology or DMAIC to say, yeah, I would like to make more money. And you set your projects up so that they also help be more environmentally minded and also more socially. that's kind of like, yeah, that's good too. With my money.
Right.
So we kind of took the, in our area at least, we're focusing on training up the product development team to be those types of people. So we're teaching them Lean Six Sigma. We're teaching them this methodology around social responsibility. And basically, as long as we have a budget for it, everybody genuinely likes the results. So I'm under no illusion that I'm going to change our company by going and talking to our presidents and changing their mind, and you know, all of a sudden they're going to become entrepreneurial. And don't get me wrong, where their knowledge is at, they're doing the best they can with what they have. But we're focused on individual engagement, so maybe more of a grassroots type approach. Mm-hmm. Because people can make a difference in organizations, and as Brian has proven, outside organizations too, when you're actually connecting with other organizations, the nonprofits and stuff like that, changing people's perspectives. So that's where we're focusing our efforts.
Sure.
For doing this in a facility, the sustainability aspect, I mean, ISO or anyone else, is there a set of standard measures when you go over to any factory to measure that you kind of have to have a baseline for? Air usage, energy usage, amount of recycling waste that, say, someone comes out of their master's degree and has some needs, so they can kind of go, this is where we need to start.
Well, I'll say that part of this methodology is tying your metrics back to the GRI metrics, which are kind of these generic social, social responsibility metrics that look at all those things from the environmental input, energy usage, carbon emissions, to employee engagement, outreach to the community, donations, all that kind of stuff. It's kind of packaged up as these are the type of metrics you should be looking at. And they're trying to use that as a framework for getting standardization across many different companies to say, can we all measure this at least consistently so we can now start to do comparisons that says, how does Interface compare to Tesla in terms of these metrics? Whereas if everybody has their own metrics, then it's hard to say, well, you guys are measuring it differently, or you're counting that, and they're not counting that, and that's not really fair. So the GRI is intended to allow for comparisons by standardizing how those metrics are done, but each company may or may not have a application to those, each metric.
A couple of applicable tools we use at Interface that I think are more industry non-specific, LCAs, life cycle analysis, and then EPDs, environmental product declarations, are the two that we use to do exactly what Brian says, which is we also use the GRI metrics as well to measure the other things, but we make a lot of business decisions based off those EPDs and LCAs. And we got it stacked up high and deep on our website if y'all want to read about that.
Yeah, so here's the connection between the GRI and the goal down to your measurements that you're taking for the product. It's really the students coming out with really know if you go and measure that.
Well, Interface has a very specific set of metrics on their website, and they're very detailed, and we've been tracking for 20 years. So if you're interested in looking at where we've come and why we made those decisions, Sherpa's actually having a virtual conference in June, and Connie Hensler is the lady who's responsible for our LCA and EPD program. She's going to be talking about that specifically to answer the question you just said. How do you get started doing this? And so anyway, if y'all are interested in that, it's June the 20th or something like that. So I'll be speaking on that. It's a virtual conference, which is great from a sustainability standpoint, right? It's truly sustainable virtual sustainability conference. And then Connie will be speaking as well on the opposite there.
But like in terms of metrics too, I think if the organization's already doing some other stuff like they're ISO 14001 certified, they're probably going to be better off with having some existing metrics in place to be able to link in or find these projects. But I'm sure a lot of organizations are getting into there and you're saying there is no metrics right now, or it's disjointed, or one person knows about it, but it's not really fitting into the scorecard. That's the Hoshin Kanri idea, is that where does this metric drive to the top level that the management and leadership care about? And if it dies somewhere in the middle, good luck with trying to sell your project or make some improvements, because that alignment is missing. And so that exercise to go and at least figure out how to get it aligned, or realize that it's not aligned and you're going to really struggle. And that's a different improvement, is to go get it fit in there at the top level somehow, or make it important.
Well, I will say this too, I share this tidbit with especially a lot of students that we have working. You know, a lot of times they say, well, you know, I don't have access to the CIO or the president or blah, 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 the CEO, whatever. But you do have access to the 3 or 4 videos and social posts they send out every week, and they tell you what's important. So make sure what your projects are connected with what they're saying. So that way, when you get a chance to say, I need funding, or I need help, or I need a team, or whatever, you can be connected to them and say, oh, well, you said, so we're doing that. He wants to stop. Most people won't say, yeah, no, I'll stop until I approve it. No, they want you to do something. They just they want to make sure you're doing what, you know, what's aligned with them. So,
I think that's what I was trying to do at my last company is with my green team, and say, well, who cares about the green team? Well, there's some cost savings opportunities. Probably the biggest one, employee engagement, is I think we can really affect that if we can get people caring about some what they might see as non-work related activities. They feel like the company cares or is interested in these initiatives, maybe they're going to stick around a little bit, or they're going to care a little bit more about that organization. And hey, this is good publicity too. You know, we got a certain sustainability award. You know, is this something we can promote to our customers and say, this is why we're a good supplier for you? I mean, how valuable would that be? And so that's the business reasons we can tie back some of that work. Instead of just saying, hey, it's the right thing to do, yeah, that's great, but what are the actual high-level things that the organization cares about the most?
Well, we talk a lot in our internal teams, too, inside of product development, which is broader than just making the product. But we talk a lot about, in our group, about doing things that's good for the person, good for the role they're in, like the process that they're in, and good for the company. It shouldn't be, here's my interpretation of that, okay? If people are asking you to do things that's bad for you because it's going to take one for the team, they're manipulating you. They're not really, they're taking advantage of you. So people who want to have this high level of engagement can't take advantage of people. They have to be honest and transparent and open with them and say, hey, you need to do this because there's opportunity for you to be promoted in the future. There's opportunity for you to learn. And it'd be true. And also, it's interesting too that a lot of our stakeholder engagement projects we start up with, if you don't want to be here, leave. Mm-hmm. We don't want to waste your time. And you know, if you're there and you got 5 people in the room, you're starting a project, 4 of them leave, well, I think we know where this project's going to go. So, you know, make sure that the people, that's the way you get engagement, that's the way you get real authenticity, and that's how you also get a lot of power socially from an opinion leader standpoint. You know, people in the organization at lower levels who want to grow, want to learn, you attract people like that into your area. I'll say this without any qualms. I very much want to recruit the very best people to work on my team. Doesn't everybody? I want to have it stacked up high and deep. When we post a job, I want to be able to pick which one's the best fit for our group. And that's very much how it works out when you offer engagement and sustainability, even on a small scale. Back to the individual engagement piece. So,
any other questions?
If anybody has a few extra hours, I'd be glad to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.